Good afternoon. Welcome. It is the Friday edition of GX on Agriculture as we wind down crop week in Saskatchewan and, of course, look ahead to Manitoba Ag Days coming up next week at the Keystone Center in Brandon. Coming up on the program today, well, they say negotiations are give and take thing. Perhaps some comments from U.S. President Trump today suggest that he's willing to give a bit. We'll tell you how we reach that assumption coming up on the program today. Speaking of NAFTA, we'll chat with Andrew Dixon. He's the general manager of Manitoba Pork. Get his thoughts on the upcoming next round of the NAFTA renegotiations set to take place in Montreal later this month. Also on the program today, we'll hear from Bernie McLean. He's a director with Saskanola, farms in the Glasslyn area, and he'll tell us about grade school, which was a workshop that three commodity groups joined together to present back in Rosetown and North Battleford in the fall. So we'll hear from Bernie McLean on that. First, though, the agriculture weather outlook.
Today, Phil, does the whole weekend look like it's going to be a write-off, or is it going to warm up a bit for us?
Well, it's not going to warm up. It'll be a few degrees warmer, and I guess it's all relative, but we're still going to have the winds, and the winds really are the bigger concern. It's cold. It's been colder, but certainly cold, and with those winds factored in, the extreme cold warning does remain in effect. Temperatures this afternoon struggling up to around minus 23. We've had winds generally around 20, west to northwest, 15 to 25 through the afternoon, and that will keep the wind chill pretty close to minus 40 for a good portion of the day. So certainly not improving today, nor does it really improve tonight. The winds do come down overnight a bit, 10 to 20, even lighter toward morning. But the actual air temperature down to minus 30. So while wind chill is less of a factor, still enough of one to keep us feeling like minus 40. Tomorrow, well, as I mentioned, it's all relative. We're a little warmer, minus 17. Sunshine mixes with a bit of cloud cover, and not a very strong wind for most of the day. 10 to 20 early on, picking up to 15 to 25, though, through the afternoon, minus 17 the high, putting wind chills minus 25 to minus 30 during the peak of the day, but at least through the morning, it'll be colder than that. Some cloud cover thickens up tomorrow night. We may see a flurry or two, but not much of anything important, down to minus 22 for the low. And we stay in those minus teens on Sunday. Sunshine returns after a bit of cloud cover to start the day, and winds are up again, 15 to 25. Some higher gusts for the middle part of the day on Sunday. That means even though temperatures are, well, similar to tomorrow at minus 18, the wind chill noticeably colder for Sunday afternoon. There is some warmer air in sight. We'll get to it next week, but it's going to be a rather slow process. We're still close to minus 20, minus 21 on Monday, a mostly sunny sky. Winds west to northwest on Monday. They turn into the south to southwest on Tuesday. We've had this frontal system. It dug southward and took some cold air almost to the Gulf of Mexico. And it's a very narrow wedge of cold air, though, so the western edge of it will start to squeeze toward us, and as that happens, the colder air shifts to the east, and we get into some more moderating temperatures. In fact, we'll be back into minus single numbers, well above average, by the end of the week, but it'll take a few days to get there. Minus 15 on Tuesday, and we'll tack on a few degrees each day for the middle of the week.
Thank you, Phil. Now, turning to the temperature roundup, minus 27 in La Paw and Roplin. Minus 26 for Swan River, Shoal Lake Russell, Saskatoon, all 26. At minus 25, Brandon, Regina, Hudson Bay, Broadview, Mooseman, Wynyard, Wadena, and Kelvington. It's minus 24 in Indian Head and Dauphin. The Yorkton-Melville region, sunny, but that's deceiving, of course, because it's also windy and cold. The wind is west at 22, relative humidity 70%. Our temperature is up 2 degrees in the past hour at minus 24, but the wind chill still minus 36 degrees. Yesterday's high, minus 23, the low, minus 28. Our provincial temperature extremes in Saskatchewan range from a high of minus 19 at Maple Creek down to minus 42 at Uranium City. In Manitoba, Sprague was the warmest place in the province at minus 17, Thompson the coldest, minus 37. Normals for this date, we'd expect daytime highs around minus 13 with overnight lows near minus 24. Sunrise this morning was at 10 to 9. The sun will set this afternoon at 5:07. Again, our current temperature temperature up 2 degrees in the past hour, now minus 24, but west wind at 22, still giving us severe wind chills in the minus 36 range. Well, not range, minus 36 exactly, I guess, but so minus 35 range. And you're listening to GX on Agriculture. It's 1223. Quick break, and we're right back after this. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. Ag Review is coming up next at 1230. Three commodity groups joined together to present Grade School 2017 back in the fall in Rosetown and North Battleford. To learn more about degrading factors in wheat, barley, and canola, representatives from the Canadian Grain Commission provided grading demonstrations for producers and discussed proper sampling techniques. Canadian International Grains Institute technical staff talked about quality requirements for Canadian wheat around the world. Bernie McLean is a director with SAS Canola. He farms in the Glasslyn area, and he explains the purpose of the workshops.
Farmers were maybe looking for some clarification on how things are done in the elevators, and SAS Canola, along with SAS Barley and SAS Wheat, took the initiative to get organized and get these grading workshops going. They were in conjunction with Canadian Grain Commission and SIGI, and yeah, they were one-day grading workshops with, we were shooting for about 25 producers at each to begin with here. That's a comfortable number that the Grain Commission was willing to work with. That way it kept it fairly interactive. And the 2 days went really well.
McLean says it was a hands-on workshop that gave producers more information on the grading process.
They had booths or tables set up, so you could actually do the grading with them. Wheat, barley, and canola were the focus. You could ask questions on any crop, but they actually had examples of the three grains just mentioned. But they went through and explained the process, the steps, I guess, to determine a grade in each of those three grains. It wasn't necessarily about coming out of the workshop thinking that you were going to be a grain grader. That wasn't the intent at all. The intent was more to understand the terminology and the equipment used, and again, the process to determine that grade.
McLean talks about some of the key takeaways from the workshop, including the producer's right to witness the grading process.
That it is a producer's full right to witness your grain being graded. So again, it's not about going in there and pretending or thinking that you're a grader. I mean, that's an art in itself. It takes lots of years. But knowing that you have the right to witness it. A few of the questions that day, or one of the questions that day was, you know, I go to the elevator and it says employees only beyond this point, and yet that beyond that point is where your grain is being graded. So at times you almost felt like, or producers sometimes feel that they weren't welcome to actually be back there to see the grain being graded. So that was a very clear point. It's definitely your right to see your grain being graded. One of the struggles nowadays is elevator efficiency. To keep that line of trucks moving, because it generally is. The probe system now has helped to increase that efficiency, and a lot of times your grain is already graded before you get to the elevator with your truck. You know, sometimes there's 3-4 trucks between you and the doorway or the driveway, and by that point the grain has been graded. That's an efficiency thing that is really good as far as the elevators go, but again, it's harder for you to witness your grain being graded. You still have the right to ask, though. One thing that was kind of made clear that day, Joey Vanesti with the Grain Commission had made the comment that having a good idea of what your grade is before you even get to the elevator is probably a real good option. Then at that point, going to the elevator and having a discussion maybe prior to delivery of the grain to have a conversation, this is kind of what I expect. So whether or not you had that grain graded by the Grain Commission, which is something you can do, you can send it in and have your samples graded there. Then you have a ticket that actually indicates from the Canadian Grain Commission what it's graded as. That way, if there's a discrepancy, you've got something at least to have the discussion with. But, I mean, there's no reason that these samples can't be taken to the elevator prior to and gone through fairly well with the manager, with the grader on site, and have a good, clear understanding of the grade. A lot of times it ends up being a dispute after the fact, and then that tends to cause tension, I guess, between a grower and maybe a receiving elevator. So Joey made it very clear, know your grade before you go, whether it's the grain commission, whether it's the elevator you're going to be dealing with. If you know that grade, it tends to alleviate some of those stresses. Another problem nowadays, too, a lot of farms don't deliver their own grain anymore. A lot of it's delivered by custom grain haulers, which has kind of become the norm. So without actually being there to witness it, and that's one of the struggles about witnessing it, again, Joey made it very clear, have it graded, whether it's the grain commission that does it or whether it's the elevator you're dealing with prior to delivery. Then everybody has the expectations set. And if it varies on delivery, then you can have that good conversation.
McLean says many producers have questioned a grade they've been assigned for a particular crop. He says the workshop helped to explain the intricacies of the process.
I guess the grading process maybe isn't quite as simple as I had once thought. There's a number of different sieve sizes you can use. And again, there's reasons that they use these different sizes of sieves. Again, it's a process. The grain grading guide is actually a guide that's available. I just brought it up on my phone here as we're speaking now, and it's easy to get to. It explains the steps. I don't know how readily known that is. I'm assuming many guys maybe, or a few guys have looked for that and kind of use that or maybe have it handy with them.
McLean says other discussions at the workshop centered on canola and assessing green seed or heated seed.
The Grain Commission actually has some color charts that they have available. Canola Digest actually sent these color charts out in one of the fall publications. And that question was actually raised a fair bit as to what's actually distinctly green canola seed. Because you can get a lime green seed, but it's actually not distinct. And it seems that there, even in the room that day, there was a lot of variance in what was really considered distinctly green. So obviously everybody's eyes see color slightly different. But the Grain Commission has these little color tabs for both green and heated seed. And then when you do your roll out your canola to determine green seed, use those color charts actually. Can help on years when green count is maybe kind of borderline between number one and number two grades on canola.
McLean says overall he found the workshop very informative.
I found the workshop to be a very useful tool. Obviously the conversation that you have with your elevator manager or the graders that are doing the grade on your grain at the elevator, that's the thing that all farmers need to be comfortable with. You never really want to be confrontational. You just want to have that good conversation. So the takeaway for me was to obviously know your grade, whether it's through the grain commissioner, whether it's taking those samples in and have them graded properly prior to delivery, but then being able to have that good conversation with your elevator.
Bernie McLean farms in the Glasslyn area, and he's a SAS canola director. It's a little after 12:30 now. U.S. President Donald Trump has told the Wall Street Journal he's open to extending the March deadline for concluding talks aimed at modernizing the agreement. Canadian Foreign Affairs Minister Chrystia Freeland thinks that was a sensible suggestion on Trump's part.
We have approached these negotiations with goodwill. We've done our homework. We are working extremely hard. But for us, we've always felt that imposing artificial deadlines was not necessary from the Canadian standpoint.
The NAFTA talks are set to resume later this month in Montreal. One of Canada's biggest mushroom producers is merging with one of the biggest producers in the U.S. Pennsylvania-based South Mill Mushrooms has announced it will combine operations with B.C.-based Champs Mushrooms. Champs' current operation includes 12 indoor mushroom farms in B.C., producing over 35 million pounds of mushrooms annually for distribution across Canada and into the U.S. The company employs about 600 people. Salt Mill moves about 75 million pounds of fresh, frozen, and processed mushrooms annually through distribution centers in Atlanta, New Orleans, Houston, and Dallas to points across the U.S. and into Montreal and Toronto. Hungry mobs ransacked a food collection center, and a supermarket in Venezuela yesterday after, and also reportedly slaughtered cattle grazing in a field as unrest over food shortages spread throughout the country. 4 years of recession and the world's highest inflation rate have plunged millions of Venezuelans into poverty. According to reports, looters plundered a truck carrying corn, a food collection center, and a state-run supermarket. Looting has been increasing since Christmas, with food shortages and hyperinflation leaving millions of people hungry. Farm Credit Canada Ag Knowledge Exchange events are scheduled for later this month in Yorkton. On Tuesday, January 23rd, there will be a presentation on tax and corporate farms. It runs from 1 till 4 at St. Mary's Cultural Center on Wellington Avenue. The following day will feature two presentations. At St. Mary's Cultural Center, the first, running from 9 till noon, will focus on how to build tax-saving succession plans. Then, in the afternoon, there will be a workshop on how to get more from your farm's financial data. This workshop will help participants gain better financial control of their farm business by learning and implementing best practice management or business management techniques. The events are complimentary for all producers. Participants can register online at www.fcc.ca/agknowledge or by calling 1-888-332-3301. And we have the livestock market report. Today's livestock futures, U.S. livestock futures, coming up next. Saskatchewan Agriculture Minister Lyle Stewart is hoping there may be an opportunity for marijuana to become a regular crop for Saskatchewan farmers. Stewart says Ottawa is the sole regulator for production, and so far, only greenhouses have been licensed to grow marijuana for security reasons.
The federal government's entirely responsible for the regulations around growing it. We get to govern retail operations and regulations around that. The federal government is responsible for the growth of the plants, and they will set the rules. And so far, permits are only available to greenhouse growers. I don't know if we'll ever get to a point where it can be grown in open fields. If there is, of course, there'll be fencing and security requirements, but we're not there yet. I know the greenhouse growers are still a little bit in the dark, too, about how the rules are going to work out. But I talked to them yesterday, and they don't seem to know much more than we do about it, which is not very much.
Stewart says some farmers are interested in growing marijuana as a cash crop.
I hope there's going to be an opportunity for open field growing of it at some point, but like I say, there'll be some pretty serious and expensive security around all that.
Stewart says hemp is already grown on the prairie, so marijuana could also become a crop. He was asked for a time frame when farmers might start growing pot in their fields.
I don't know if it'll ever happen, but I guess it's going to depend on what the demand is for it. If it can be met in greenhouse situations, that will be the way they'll want to go first, because it's easier to provide the security. But if there's more demand that can be met that way, perhaps there'll be a time.
Stewart anticipates any acreage devoted to marijuana would be quite small and would have little impact on food production.
Compared to our major crops, it'd be very small acres, even if it ever does get in open field situations. So it won't make much difference on our food production.
Marijuana is expected to be legalized in Canada in July. Livestock futures are up in trading this afternoon. February live cattle, 117.17, up 10 cents. April live cattle, 119.22, up 35 cents. March feeder cattle, 142.47, up $1.10. April feeder cattle, 143 even, up $1.15. February lean hogs, 71.10, up 12 cents. And April lean hogs trading this afternoon at 74.22, up 40 cents. And those are the latest U.S. livestock futures. We'll check the grain prices coming up in about 10 minutes from now. At 10 to 1. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Rod McDonald. The general manager of Manitoba Pork says elected U.S. state officials and agriculture leaders want to see NAFTA improved in a way that will increase the volumes of trade among the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. This past week in Kansas City, Missouri, state agriculture and rural leaders posted the 2018 Legislative Agriculture Chairs Summit. Andrew Dixon is general manager of Manitoba Pork.
In the United States, all politics is local. So what happens is that if there's going to be any sort of trade cases, they tend to get started at the local level first in terms of pressure for the federal government of the United States to act. So we are very cognizant of that. And so the more we can dispel myths about what goes on in Canada in terms of our industry and push and promote the principles of and benefits of free trade between the two countries, it's to our benefit. And also, and we find friends in the United States. They're looking for allies on this matter, and they want us to reach out and talk to their compatriots about the benefits of free trade and how it impacts back at the state level and the benefits it brings. And something like 30 in the United States, in 30 of the states, Canada is their main export market.
Dixon says it's extremely important that we have strong allies in the U.S.
They guide opinion, and if they're not well informed, they will make mistakes. It's the same thing that happens in Canada. If our provincial leaders aren't well briefed and well informed on a matter, then they'll adopt policies and programs that will hurt industries. In particular, the pork industry in Canada has been subject to trade conflict with the United States over a period of 40 years, and we've lost most of the cases. So it's only recent years. Like we've been able to win on, say, country of origin labeling. We've won a previous trade case in 2004, 2005. And as a result of these cases, our friends in the United States who were very supportive of free trade told us, like, it's really important to have a physical presence at state events where possible, where you can promote the benefits of free trade.
While U.S. President Donald Trump may not be a big fan of NAFTA, Dixon says most state officials and ag leaders that he's met with are.
They recognize Canada invests in the United States and creates jobs and activities and services for their people, the same way America invests in trades with Canadian companies and markets directly to Canadian consumers. And we play to each other's strengths in these areas. And it was very clear to me from the people I talked to, they looked to Canada as a partner in growing business, both in agriculture and other industries. So you get the occasional concern about somebody getting some mutual advantage over another, but I didn't run into anybody who was totally against Canada and wanted to see NAFTA wrecked. In fact, it was the exact opposite. They want NAFTA to stay in place, and if in some of its quirks to be fixed, and so that we can improve or increase the volume of trade that goes between the two countries.
President Trump toned down his anti-trade rhetoric when he addressed a large gathering of farmers earlier this week.
Well, I think it's very noticeable that the American president made an effort to make a presentation at the annual meeting of the American Farm Bureau in Nashville this week. It's the first time in many years that a president has actually shown up at that event and made such a presentation. And he indicated that he wanted to keep it to be at the table on NAFTA, but he wanted to negotiate a better deal for the U.S. So that sends two signals to me. A, he's not going to pull out, and B, you know, there is some offer to negotiate at the table. Now, we have to bear in mind, the Americans are hard negotiators, and they're going to say all kinds of things publicly. We got to be careful we don't react. the key position Canada has taken is we're open to suggestions, we're not walking away from the table, and we will negotiate and continue to negotiate till we resolve the concerns of the various parties at the table. So I think that's a good, strong position to be in. Then we don't have to offer anything up openly in the press. I think that's what the negotiations are all about, is where the negotiators we tentatively seek out where the other party might be accommodating upon. So this idea of negotiating through the media is not appropriate.
Finally, Dixon says free trade is critical to the economic success of Manitoba.
If we don't export our products to important markets like the United States and to other countries, like we're very concerned about the Trans-Pacific Agreement for the 11 countries that are still in. We're very concerned about negotiating a free trade agreement with China. We have to have trade agreements under which we have clear rules, and we're not at a disadvantage to the bigger powers like the European Union or the United States. Otherwise, be absolutely blunt, we won't have an economy that's growing. And if we don't have an economy that's growing, we don't have taxes flowing. And if we don't have taxes flowing, we won't have our healthcare programs, we won't have our education programs, and we won't be able to help families who are in difficulty through our family services programs. This is not just about agriculture. This is about trying to improve the economy of Manitoba for the greater good of all Manitobans.
Andrew Dixon is general manager of Manitoba Pork. There was a panel discussion featuring three female bloggers during the Farm and Food Care Saskatchewan conference that was held back in the fall. There's plenty of competition for attention in the online world, and Leslie Kelly is finding her niche. She was raised on a grain farm in the Watrous area before starting a career in marketing and accounting in the ag sector. She and her husband are active on their family farm. She started a widely read blog called High Heels and Canola Fields a few years ago. She has over 11,000 followers on Twitter and also co-hosts a weekly podcast. She describes social media as a passion.
The one thing that I love is that everyone has a story. Everyone has a different background that I can take back and I can learn. I can write something about it, and I can take back to our farm and maybe apply what they do, their learnings, and how we can do things differently on our farm. I like to focus right now on Twitter and Facebook. So Twitter is where all the businesses are, where the farming community is, and I like to focus on Facebook because that's where I can interact with consumers primarily.
We asked Kelly how she decides what to write about in her blog. Do you have a plan, or is it something that's just more spontaneous?
I wish I could say I planned, but to me, it's when something impacts me either negatively or positively, and I will take the time to think about what I want people to think, feel, or do, and really hone my message on that. I like to share photos. I like to also, you know, take some videos, do some live videos, but it just depends on what's going on in the day, where my inspiration comes from. A lot of the inspiration comes from, you know, actually being outside with my kids, talking to my husband, being with my friends, the questions that come up in conversations, and sometimes it's the hot topics too. But I know that if there's lots of questions on a topic, that hey, this is a good opportunity to maybe try to answer them, or you know, share a different perspective, or maybe pose more questions to learn more.
Well, it used to be that young people certainly dominated social media. It was their domain. But Kelly says that's not necessarily the case anymore.
Yeah, before, you know, my preconceived notions were it was mainly millennials, but now I'm learning and talking with, 80-year-olds and, even my niece who's 12, so it varies. And that's what I find the most amazing thing about being online is the people and the diversity and just how many people that you meet and you actually form these lifelong friendships.
Yeah, it's Leslie Kelly. She has a blog called High Heels and Canola Fields, and you can follow her on Twitter at Leslie Ray Kelly. That's Leslie, L-E-S-L-E-Y, Ray, R-A-E, Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y, or on Facebook at High Heels and Canola Fields. It's 8 before 1 now and time for the grain prices. The commodities a presentation of Mazur Group and Raynor Dean, your REMAX Blue Chip Realty Ag Specialist. Canola futures are up in early afternoon trading today. March canola, 493.10, up to 30. May canola trading at $500.90 a metric ton, up to 40. Wheat prices have dropped. March, where are we here? March Minneapolis wheat. Let's start there, as we always do. 614 and a quarter, that's down 14 and three quarters of a cent. March Kansas City wheat following, 424 and a half, down 15 and three quarters. March Chicago wheat, 419 and a half, that's down 13 and three quarters of a cent. March corn, 345 and a half, down three and a quarter. March soybeans, 955 and a quarter, up 5 and a quarter cents. And March oats, 249 and three quarters, down 0.75 cents. And those are the latest grain prices. And finally today on GX on Agriculture, the North American bison industry announced a lofty goal last year, one that's going to require a lot of future expansion. The Bison 1 Million program was unveiled during an international conference last summer. Currently, there are about 400,000 head of bison in Canada and the U.S. Terry Kremenuk from Regina is executive director of the Canadian Bison Association.
We recognize that it's a very aggressive target, but we have to start somewheres, and the important thing is that we are moving in the right direction and we're growing the industry.
Now, the bison industry is going to have to see significant expansion if it's going to achieve that target of 1 billion animals.
It would probably be around 10% a year, and we know that's aggressive, but if it's 2027 or 2032, that's not so much the issue. It's the direction of the growth of the industry. There's a number of ways that it can be done. Number one, you make the present producers more productive, get more out of their land. That's one strategy. Have the public sector, the parks and what have you, increase their numbers. There's a number of non-governmental organizations that have bison. They can also increase their numbers. The First Nations communities, they have land base, and there's that spiritual and cultural connection.
The demand for bison meat is certainly there, and bison prices are good. Kremenuk says demand currently exceeds supply by 10 to 25%.
Currently, the demand exceeds the supply. So it'll be the same consumers getting their needs fulfilled. And in the future, there are going to be new consumers, undoubtedly. You know, if there is a strong demand for the product, for example, why would you want to invest a lot of money in increasing demand? You want to maintain it and grow it slowly. So the demand has grown. You look at what's happened in the U.S. with the naming of bison as the national mammal. That's increased demand. People become more familiar with it. The introduction of bison into Banff National Park has also increased the profile of bison. All those things coming together certainly have an increase in demand.
Terry Kremenuk is president of the Canadian Bison Association. And we'll close out GX on Agriculture now with our precision weather forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, and Russell regions. Extreme cold warning remains in effect. Sunny this afternoon, high minus 23, but the wind west-northwest 15 to 25 gives high wind chills. Clear tonight, wind southwest 10 to 20. Overnight low near minus 30. Partly sunny tomorrow, high minus 17, wind south-southwest 15 to 25. Sunday, cloudy at first, then some clearing, wind northwest 15 to 25, high minus 18. Mainly sunny on Monday, 21, of course minus 21. And Tuesday, continuing sunny, high near minus 15. On the temperature roundup this hour, minus 27 in the Paw and Roblin, minus 26 in Swan River, Shoal Lake, Russell, and Saskatoon. Brandon, Regina, Hudson Bay, Broadview, Musiman, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, all reporting minus 25 degrees. And Dauphin and Indian Head at minus 24. In the York and Melville region, it's sunny. The wind west at 22, relative humidity 70%. Our temperature minus 24. Factor in the wind, though, and we come up with a wind chill around minus 36 degrees. That's it for today. Plan to join me again Monday afternoon at 12:15 for GX on Agriculture. I'm Rod McDonald.